Hello, hockey fans. This is episode 78 of the Clappercast. I'm Burke, and as always, joined by Sean. Sean, how are you today?
You know, another day, another seven games starting at 4 p.m.
Yeah, tell me about it. I feel like every schedule is a little bit biased to the East Coast because that's where like a lot of people live, but it feels like this week it was really noticeable where there was like maybe like three late games and everything started so much earlier in the day, and it's so frustrating.
It's hard. We basically need the NHL to give us every NHL fan needs a situation room in their house so that they have enough screens to watch every single game that starts at 4 p.m. Pacific time, I'll add.
Yeah, and then all the games end at 7, and you're like, what do I do now?
Yeah, I guess I'll just go to bed.
Yeah. I guess I'll just watch videos on YouTube about the game breakdowns and all that sort of stuff.
I'll watch the game breakdowns of the
game. Can't possibly do anything else. Yeah, exactly. But it seemed like there was definitely some more games postponed that week. We had Minnesota, New Jersey, Buffalo, some more Colorado games,
A few of Philly as well.
Right. So, a few guys on the COVID list. There's a lot coming off. I think for New Jersey, they had almost their whole team before today.
Yeah,
that was on the COVID list.
Four left, I think. It's Heischer, Zajac, and a couple others.
Yeah, so that's good news. And then there's also been some false positives. So, I think it was Puljujärvi had one, Stamkos had one, and somebody else.
Yeah, it was either false positives or they were around someone who was positive, so they had to make sure they got a negative. But I mean, the Oilers one, because they ended up pushing the Oilers Habs game back that day by an hour to make sure every player got their test back before the game was able to go on, which is a bit of a change from the week before where they would just play and then the player would be pulled in the middle of a game. So, nice to see they're learning for their mistakes.
Canadian dominance. Just doing things right. We hope. It was kind of good to see that, guys like Stamkos were like, I know I had a false positive, I'll be back. And then he had one, hitting a negative test and was able to go back in. So good to see that, they're still following the protocols, even though the player's like, hey, I'm not positive.
Yeah.
So that's good. I guess let's dive into one of the bigger pieces of news for the week, which was the Ottawa Senator trade. Where Ottawa traded Cedric Paquette and Alex Galchenyuk to the Carolina Hurricanes in exchange for Ryan Dzingel. So Ryan Dzingel was traded out of Ottawa in 2019 at the deadline to Columbus in exchange for Anthony Duclair, who since left Ottawa, and a couple second-round picks. What are your initial thoughts on the trade, Sean?
I'm pretty sure my text to you was WTF. I was really confused. And Ottawa just picks these two guys up. Paquette, Jay, they just traded for him before the season started. Galchenyuk was a free agent signing. And they go and trade them for an underperforming winger who might give them a little bit more scoring depth. I mean, it works out fine for Ottawa because they get, the potential better player. Because I think Dzingel's had more success recently than either Paquette or Galchenyuk. And, Paquette managed to find himself healthy, scratched on the worst team in the league. So that's not a big loss there. Galchenyuk was okay-ish, but he was largely invisible and he only played 9 minutes a night. So they're not losing much with that either. And also it just helps Galchenyuk on his world tour. So, it's another city crossed off the list for him. I think Carolina gets a bit of a cap dump because Galchenyuk's already being sent to the AHL. He's not even taxi squatted. And, Paquette's probably just cheaper and some sort of a depth guy that fills a role that they didn't have with Dzingel on the roster. So,
yeah, definitely agree. That is kind of a weird trade for Ottawa. They brought Cedric Paquette in. He came over with Braden Coburn in December, as well as a 2022 second round pick. And they really just, gave Tampa Anders Nilsson, who's still injured, and Marian Gaborik's contract. So they're really And as you mentioned, Alex Galchenyuk was a free agent signing, so they're really not losing much in terms of like just bringing these guys in and sending them out. You know, Paquette was a healthy scratch, like you said. He's had 1 goal, 0 assists in 9 games. Galchenyuk, 1 goal in 8 games, not playing a lot. And then Paquette makes $1.65 million, expires at the end of this season. Galchenyuk was a 1-year deal, $1.05 million, and Dzingel makes $3.375 million, and he's a UFA at the end of the season. So you're totally right. It's a bit of a cap move for Carolina. You know, since Dzingel has come to Carolina, he's been a healthy scratch. He's only got 2 goals, 2 assists in 11 games so far this year. To me, it seems like a good move for Carolina to get rid of a guy who can't really crack the top six for them, and then get a defensive center for their bottom six. And you mentioned this as well, that Galchenyuk already has been assigned to the AHL. So he's not, you know, he goes to Chicago now, I guess, rather than Carolina. Yeah, it's kind of a weird move for Ottawa, because I don't think their issue is generating offense. It seems like, you know, they could have really kept somebody like Paquette, and yeah, maybe he's not playing, but he seems like a better defensive option than some of the other centers that they have on their team. So it's kind of strange that they got rid of him, but I guess with Dzingel, he's a known commodity to them. He's played there before. They're probably hoping that they can re-sign him, hopefully for cheaper. He does have a decent shot, so maybe they're hoping that, you know, they have such a high shot total per game that they're hoping maybe some of those shots turn into goals with him.
Yeah, I mean, Dzingel is a former 20-goal scorer with the Sens. He's struggled big time since he left Ottawa. But, you know, he's had 2 seasons with 20 goals with the Senators in the past, and I guess they're hoping that he can refine that potential if he's given a bit of a bigger role. Like, he'll have more of a chance in Ottawa than he will with Carolina. And that's probably where he found success before, is that these two Senators teams were a bit struggly, and Dzingel got more of a shot, more of a chance to, you know, get extra ice time compared to where he would be on a better team.
And, you know, in our text back and forth, we kind of mentioned this a bit, but it seems weird that they moved these two guys when it was, there was a bit of a story that came out that Derek Stepan wanted to return to the United States because his family's there, and, you know, with all the border restrictions, he couldn't see his family, and he was rumoredly wanting out. It's just kind of weird that that wasn't the guy that they moved. It was, you know, these two rando guys, I guess. But yeah,
I guess if the destination was Carolina, I think Stepan's family is in Arizona, I'm assuming. So I guess probably, you know, moving across the country into a different division where you won't travel to that city at all wouldn't help alleviate that too much. You won't have too much downtime to go see them or anything.
Yeah, and I haven't heard too much about that story since that initial kind of pop-up. It seems that he's playing a bit more and quieted down a bit. But, you know, it's like if he wants to return to the same city as where his family lives, like, that's probably not going to happen. So, you know, that's a really hard thing to put on the team. Like, hey, I want to be traded to this one team.
Yeah, I think I did see kind of a couple of days after the initial story broke, is that he's like, you know what, there was like a statement put out by him or something. It's like, you know what, I'm here in Ottawa, you know, I'm going to, you know, I'm happy to be here, I'm going to stay and play, and like that type of thing. So it's probably alleviated for now. He's a UFA at the end of the season anyways, so, you know, he'll either get rental traded out at the deadline, or he'll just sign elsewhere in the summer. And that's probably kind of the, you know, the light at the end of the tunnel for him, is the ability to peace out at the end of the year.
There is a way out of Ottawa. This isn't forever.
The way out of Ottawa is to have 2 really good seasons, and then the owner will make the GM trade you.
Yeah, surely you're valuable, and then they'll move on from you. But, yeah, I mean, I guess Dzingel, you know, they'll have to quarantine and all that and be 2 weeks before they see him. I guess, again, you're not really – it's a low-risk trade, considering the guys that you traded out were not playing every game. And so it's not really a big roster impact right away.
Exactly,
whereas, like, the Winnipeg trade – you know, they move Line A and they bring Dubois in, and then can't play for like 2 whole weeks, you know, that's a pretty significant piece of your team to move Line A. Whereas these guys, it's...
You're exchanging healthy scratches, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, so, like, it's a weird move. It doesn't really make sense to me, but, you know, I guess they're banking on Dzingel fitting in better with Ottawa, even though it's a different coach and a different system from when he was last year. You know, they, I guess they just want to generate more offense, which is weird because they get, like, 35 shots a game or something, and...
I don't think their ultimate goal right now is to find the best combination. It's just to kind of fill the roster and see who sticks. Ways to, like, just find anybody who overperforms or, you know, does well. Like, the same thing that they did with Dzingel and JG Pageau was, like, play them a whole bunch, get them to produce, and then sell them high.
Right. Yeah. Also, shout out to JG Pageau. What a week he had. He was... really good week for him. He struggled out of the gate, and I think he got like 3 goals or something this week. He got 2 in one game.
Not bad.
Really good week for him. Okay, so and then the next other big piece of news was that the Penguins found their guys. So they hired Brian Burke as president of hockey operations and Ron Hextall as general managers. So Flyers fans everywhere cringing that, you know, Flyers legend is now... Oh. Now leading their rivals' team. So
that's got to hurt big time.
Well, you know, when you fire somebody, you kind of can't control where they go. And, you know, if there was bad blood, where else should he go to get back at him?
Right.
I don't really know what a president of hockey operations does compared to a general manager. But, you know, Brian Burke is an absolute legend. So, I guess good job. I don't know. But, yeah, I don't know. What does a president of hockey operations do? Do you know?
I feel like it's probably just another one of those, like, overseeing positions where it's, like, the GM deals with the players and that type of stuff, and the president of hockey ops kind of oversees the different aspects where it's, like, the, you know, the general manager, the probably the assistant GMs and, like, the farm teams and, like, the prospects and stuff. You know, setting, like, the vision, the priorities about of all of that.
Right. So general manager is the day-to-day stuff. And then president of hockey operations is like, hey, this is the direction we want to do. Go there. But Brian Burke got a nice send-off from Sportsnet, where they all trashed him a bit. And then he was actually at the game where on Valentine's Day when the Penguins played against the Capitals. So both Hextall and Brian Burke were there, taken in the game. And moving on to Hextall, how do you think he's going to fit into this team? Do you like the hiring? Do you think it's kind of strange? What are your initial thoughts?
Well, to my understanding, to my knowledge, like, I mean, Hextall did a decent job bringing in a lot of what Philadelphia has right now. And putting a lot of those pieces together. I'm trying to remember the timeline of his tenure in Philly relative to when they acquired a lot of their, you know, core pieces. But I think he did a fairly good job of putting all that together. So
he was there from 2014 to 2018.
Okay, so that's going to be when the Flyers put a lot of this roster that they have now that's fairly competitive together. So for Pittsburgh being in a win now mode on the verge of needing to rebuild, that's probably not a bad position or a bad person to bring in to help oversee that, to kind of get a little bit more of the roster right now. And that's where Brian Burke comes in as well with his he's already got like a win now mentality. He wants to kind of give the Pittsburgh Penguins a year or two of competitiveness yet, but to have Hextall come in and kind of kickstart the rebuild a bit, and, you know, whether or not he's good at drafting or is able to put the right people in places for that. But that should be a good hire for them. I mean, it'll help with the rivalry between Pittsburgh and Philly. You know, if Hextall does does well with Pittsburgh, he'll probably, you know, add some fuel to the fire in that rivalry, which is good.
Yeah, Brian Burke, when he was on his Sportsnet send off, I think it was Cassie Campbell asked him, like, what are your priorities with the team, and he said, yeah, we're in win now mode, and you know, there's some moves we have to do to get there, basically. And then after the season, we have like a limited number of draft picks and, you know, trying to rebuild that prospect pool and stuff. So Hextall, when he took over as general manager in 2014, he had been the assistant general manager of the Flyers for a year. He had won a Stanley Cup as assistant GM in LA in 2012. So he knew what he was doing there. He inherited a team that had a very limited prospect pool. And I took a look at his drafting history here. And when you mentioned that he has added a lot of the guys who were the core of that team, you're totally right, because let's take a look here. So 2014, he drafted Travis Sanheim, 17th overall, Nicholas Aubé-Kubel in the second round, Oscar Lindblom in the fifth round. So that's a pretty good draft right out of the gate. You know, some of those guys didn't see action for right away. But,
yeah, I mean, Aubé-Kubel has just recently, like in the last year, made his place on the roster, but he's turned into a solid depth piece for them. So that's good to find those gems late on like that.
And then the next year, Ivan Provorov, 7th overall, Travis Konecny, 24th overall. He made a couple trades to get that pick, Konecny. He's a big part of that team's offense right now. 2016, Carter Hart, 48th overall. 2017, Nolan Patrick, 2nd overall. Morgan Frost, 27th. Joel Farabee in 2018, 14th overall. The Farabee and Frost picks, he got those by trading up Braden Schenn to St. Louis. So it's a pretty significant trade, but you know, those are two great young players. Joel Farabee is really making an impact this season. And Morgan Frost, I think he's injured right now, but, you know, a solid young player for them. So drafting, he's done pretty well. You know, he's also had some guys who haven't made it yet or might not make it. In 2016, the same year as Carter Hart, he drafted 22nd overall German Rubtsov or German Rubtsov. And I think he played like 4 games for the Flyers and then went to the KHL. 2018, 19th overall, Jay O'Brien. I don't know. But, you know, overall, that's a pretty good draft record. So those are big names on the team. You know, Provorov, Hart, Konecny, Lindblom, Sanheim, Patrick, Frost, Farabee, Aubé-Kubel. That's pretty good in 5 drafts to get that many roster players that are active on the team.
And something that stands out to me, too, is, you know, getting a goalie and 2 high profile defenders in there as well. You know, those are kind of important building blocks, especially finding those players, you know, late first round or even past the first round. Those are important building blocks, especially at the beginning of a rebuild. So Pittsburgh's going to need, you know, Hextall's going to need to surround himself with the right type of scouting staff to be able to find those players. And then, you know, the right type of people to help inform him on those decisions to ultimately guide that type of drafting again in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, absolutely. And then also in his time in Philly, you know, he moved out a lot of bad contracts. So guys like LeCavalier, Pronger, Scott Hartnell, even though Hartnell was a fan favorite, he moved him. You know, he kind of tended to not do a lot of those big UFA signings. He signed a lot of like depth guys. The kind of the most notable UFA that he signed was JVR, and that was 7 years, $7 million. So, you know, JVR's doing really well right now, but I think that's kind of a bit of a questionable signing in terms of annual value. But you know, he is a grindy front of the net guy, provides some secondary scoring, and you know, I don't know if it's I can't label that one bad, but it's not exactly amazing. But you know, he didn't really make a lot of huge, big money UFA signings when he was there.
That's probably for the best. A lot of those contracts are either overpayments or they never work out very well.
Yeah. And then if you look at some of the re-signings he did, Gostis Bear, $4.5 million for 6 years. I think that was fair value when it was signed because he looked like he was really going up and up and up. And, you know, he had a couple good seasons after that, but then his play has really tapered off. Going from like 46 points to 39 and 65 points, and then he had 12 points in 42 games last year, and he's been a healthy scratch at times. And then Voracek, 8 years, $8.25 million. This was signed after an 81-point season, and he's returned to that level once since then. So that one's those are, you know, a bit questionable. But he has signed some good ones as well. Couturier signed in 2015, 6 years, 4.33. That's an unreal deal. So that one's really good. But like I said, ultimately, he didn't really target a lot of big name UFAs. He traded a lot of pieces out to make cap space and acquire picks and wasn't afraid to move fan favorites. So in Pittsburgh, he's kind of taking over a team that I think is, you know, almost in the same position as when he took over the Flyers. You know, they had a finals appearance, I guess, like a few years before he took over there, just like Pittsburgh. You know, they've had a couple cups a few years ago now, and now they're kind of in that, oh yeah, everything else sucks because we went all in and we won, and now we have, you know, we have no first round pick this year. We've got a limited prospect pool. We've got some bad contracts.
Their draft picks for this year upcoming, they have a second, a fifth, and 3 7th round picks.
Right. So
that's going to be like a really tough one to help to do anything with, really.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You know, you're not going to be able to get anybody because it's a crapshoot, you know, and this year's draft is going to suck too. And so I could see him wanting to flip some guys for next year's picks, maybe really bolster that 2022 draft.
That could be it. Because the thing is, they sound like they want to do win now mode for like at least this year. So, you know, they don't really have much in the way of assets to help bolster that. But, you know, they might be best suited to not worry about, you know, that rebuild until the next season or until the next offseason, pardon me. And then they can start bolstering the draft after that, and then they kind of get a real chance to take gauge the organization and what they have, as well as, I mean, like you said, the draft upcoming is going to be a bit of a crapshoot because half the junior players aren't really playing. You might be better off waiting until they have a season to actually scout players and then go for all the draft picks.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think his tendency to trade out guys that were really well-liked by fans will probably serve him well in Pittsburgh as well, because, you know, there's a lot of really big names that aren't really performing very well so far this year, and their goaltenders have been really subpar. You know, there's rumors about Crosby trades, and there's rumors about Fleury wanting to come back, and you know, I don't think that would either of those are very likely right now. Especially with Robin Leonard being hurt, but you know, something's got to give here. They're not where they want to be in the standings. And
to be fair, though, they are approximately where we predicted them to be, because they're tied for third. They sit fifth because of tiebreakers, which is exactly kind of where you and I had them pegged, kind of in that fourth, fighting for the fourth spot. So ultimately, you want to be higher in the standings, but they're not underperforming as much as it might seem.
Right. But I think as the season goes on, their goaltending is really not going to get them to playoffs. Like, what is it? Tristan Jarry's at an 864 save percentage.
That is atrocious.
No, 3.82 goals against average. Casey DeSmith is at 885 save percentage with a 284.
You know, so they're good. If they want to win now, they're going to have to find a bit of an upgrade on that.
Yeah. Yeah, they've got to, I think they got to do something, because, I mean, did you watch the Capitals versus Penguins game?
They won in the that game.
They won that game, but there was a lot of really weak goals that they let up.
I'm remembering the first one. I think it was Kuznetsov just kind of threw it. He flubbed the shot and just kind of went along the ice, and there was just a weak tip that just went right by. Like, you could see the shot moving on the ice in the camera. It wasn't fast enough to blur it.
Yeah, it was like a fanned pass, basically, and it just went in. And then you know, Malkin was skating in front of the net with the puck, and Backstrom just stick lifted him and then just shot it past Jari, and it's like, that level of effort is just crap by Malkin. And they don't look super. They've kind of turned it around a little bit here, but their power play is atrocious. Their goaltending's really bad. They've really got to do something.
Did you see Brian Burke's analysis on this? Kind of his priorities coming into this win now situation. Did you see that kind of segment or that interview he gave?
No. I saw it on Sportsnet, but I haven't seen it outside of that.
He talked about the last three cup winners playing, in his own words, playing long pants hockey.
Okay. Well, so, like Cooperalls?
Yeah. So, you know, he's gonna bring some guys who wear long pants into the team. I don't know what that means, but we'll find out soon.
Okay, yeah.
I think what it meant is he's talking about like big players, physical players. He's doing that whole truculence thing again, getting size and physicality into the organization. So he sees, you know, St. Louis kind of using, you know, strength and physicality in their own way to win. Tampa brings in guys like Maroon, Gaudreau, to help give them the cup. And I mean, Dallas too, making the cup final off of a, you know, stronger physical team as well. So he's seeing trends like that again, where you've got the speed, you've got the offense, but you need to protect them. You need to bolster that with strength and, you know, intimidation factors. So he's going to be looking at probably bolstering the length of the pants in the organization and bringing some physicality.
Right. So bringing in long pants to bolster your physicality. I mean, I guess, like, looking at the Capitals and the Blues, they had a lot of physical presence. They had, you know, a good, I guess, and Tampa, too, they had a good forecheck, good pressure. But, you know, it's a lot of speed and stuff, too.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's not like physicality in the way of big hits, fighting, like, that type of stuff. It's strength and just being engaged with the game. Like, you're not playing, like, an all-star game. You're playing like the Caps do, where they play hard and fast. You know, the Blues kind of use strength to overwhelm and wear down the opponent. The Lightning used it physicality in a similar way to Washington, where they play, you know, harder and faster. So it's kind of seeing if he can identify, if Burke and Hextall can identify that, and, you know, bring in a couple of guys to help with that.
Yeah. I just don't know. I think Rutherford has done some really weird moves here before he left to kind of sabotage the team moving forward.
Little do we know, Rutherford is going to go to Philadelphia now.
Yeah, yeah, that has to be the case. Like, that Mike Matheson contract is really bad. Cody Ceci is a really bad defenseman.
I mean, this team's prospect pool consists of Pierre-Olivier Joseph, who's already on the team, and Sam Poulin, they took him first round in the previous draft. He was their first round pick in like 6 years. So you can tell how deep their prospect pool is based off of that. They've got nothing to build around. Nothing to leverage, you know, no prospects to send out for win now mode, like no draft picks. So it's going to be tough for them to really improve on what's there.
Yeah, aside from Crosby and Malkin, you know, going beast mode, and Malkin's been really hot garbage this season so far, I don't really see them in win now mode, because, like, yeah, they're you know, in the mix, I guess, for you know, playoffs, and they might make it, but I don't see them with their defense and with their goaltending making a significant push. So I think Hextall would be better off to just, you know, start moving guys for four picks, because, like you said, they've got like three picks in this draft. They've got just no prospects. You know, they need to start making trades, like maybe moving guys for to bolster that prospect pool, you know, like I don't know, would, once he's back from injury, would a guy like Brian Dumoulin, like a team would want him, right, to bolster their blue line, or maybe moving Kapanen or Rust or something like that, just to, yep, to give some teams some speed or scoring talent going into playoffs. You know, they really do need to get some prospects, because like you said, they've got nobody to come up. And I know Pittsburgh has won some cups with guys like, you know, with just alphabet soup names, who no one's ever heard of before playing with Malkin or Crosby. But if your whole team is that, you know, you're going to get beat by teams like Tampa Bay or, you know, the Leafs or something. So, yeah, I don't know. But I think Hextall will be a good general manager. And, you know, he kind of, the way he left Philly was he was doing really well, but he just was reluctant to fire the coach, Hextall. And then he waited way too long to do that and ended up costing him his job. So, you know,
how long until Hextall comes to Pittsburgh? Because yeah, so got to imagine when the rebuild starts, Sullivan's not going to stick around too much.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, maybe he'll make some magic and somehow bring Fleury back to get the gang all back together and to get a starting goalie. But I've got a little bit of like Schadenfreude from this whole goalie situation for Pittsburgh, because I guess we'll kind of transition into this topic rather than the general managers. But, you know, we've seen them have the young hot goalie come up and take the reins over, and they've moved on immediately from their goalie. You know, we saw that with Fleury, where Matt Murray came in. You know, the two kind of split that first cup. And then they moved Fleury, or they moved on from Fleury. He got picked in the expansion draft. Has excelled in Vegas. And then Murray fizzled out, traded him to Ottawa. And, you know, Tristan Jarry was hot last season, and now he's kind of fizzled out a bit, you know, or at least had a slow start. You know, it's a small sample size, but it's not looking great so far. And so as a Capitals fan, it's kind of nice to see that it's not working for them for once, to have the young hotness, you know.
The young hotness.
Yeah.
So do they go full circle and get Fleury back, and then it kind of concludes the goalie saga in Pittsburgh?
Yeah, and then eventually they'll get Murray back.
On that note, do you want to transition into Marc-Andre Fleury here? Because he's got...
He's
doing pretty well this season. So Marc-Andre Fleury is currently having, you know, 8 games in, I'll add. He's currently having the best season of his career, with a .944 save percentage, 138 goals against average, 2 shutouts in his first 8 games with a 7-1-0 record. He's only given up 11 goals over those games. That's just incredible for him to have gone through the turmoil and the heartbreak of being stabbed in the back by the organization and Robin Lehner last season, losing his starting role, Lehner getting the deal that's kind of solidifying himself as the goalie of the future. Fleury spends most of the summer on the trade block and trade talks that Vegas should trade him and free up the cap space. Ends up sticking around in Vegas, and now he's sort of taken over the starting role again with his performance, and also while Lehner is out with injury or something. So it's just quite an interesting story to see that, to see his turnaround, because he's struggled and gotten worse progressively over the last 3 seasons, and now he's just completely turned that around early on this year.
Yeah, he's looked really good. I mean, let's remember that they've played once against Colorado. They won that game. It was a 1-0 game. They played them 2 more times this week. One of them is the Lake Tahoe game. And they've played Arizona. They've played Anaheim. They've played LA. They've played St. Louis once and lost in overtime or a shootout. And they've played San Jose. So they've only played like two real teams twice. But yeah, he is playing really good. And yeah, the whole Robin Lehner thing, he showed up to the rink when he was expected to start. Apparently he drove in his own car, showed up, said, "Hey, I'm not playing," and then left. and then Fleury got another start right after, like a back-to-back almost. And so I guess Leonard has a upper body injury, so he's been stabbed by De Beer again. He's been stabbed instead of Fleury this time, so it's his
Fleury,
turn.
Fleury took the sword out of his back and put it in Leonard's shoulder.
Right, yeah.
That's what happened.
So whoever can remove the sword from Fleury's back is the king of Vegas, I guess. and so someone's taking it out of Fleury's back and put it in Leonard's back. But yeah, Fleury's had a really good season. But I guess just love Vegas as a whole. Like they have a really good record. They're in the top in their division. But you know they're playing against some pretty weak teams, to be honest. Yeah.
And they have also started to struggle over the last week. Their offense is completely dried up. And they're not quite as strong as they had been early on. I think, they did manage to beat Colorado. It was Colorado's first game in like a week or two or something. And yeah, like you said, a 1-0 win. So, you know,
and
at least they got some points in their slump.
And so Colorado was without Makar. They were without Eric Johnson. They were without Sam Girard. They had no Landeskog, and so. Yeah, and it's their first game in like almost 2 weeks, so it's like, yeah, you beat them 1-0.
Yeah, so this slump for them is a little bit tricky. They're struggling a little bit, but I mean they started the season really strong, so they'll probably find a middle ground somewhere in the middle within the next week or so.
Yeah, it's just I think it's just a sign of the year and how the divisions are and how it's just you're locked into playing against your division because you have no idea how good these teams are. Like, you look at Vegas or you look at Tampa, I think those are the most obvious for me is, like, yeah, they've got a really good record. They look like they're absolutely flying. Their goalies are tearing it up. But who have they played? like Tampa, yeah, they've played some – I think they're, like, 1-0-1 against Carolina, and then they've absolutely stomped everybody else. They haven't played Dallas yet. And so they're like 4-0 against Nashville. Nashville sucks this year for some reason. They've stomped Chicago and Detroit. So it's like, oh yeah, like you're a really good team, but how do you stack up against like Boston? Because Boston's in it, right? Like Boston's in the tough division right now. Even the Leafs are a little bit more like Vegas and Tampa where, yeah, you've got a weaker division with less teams in it. So you've got Montreal who looks sharp, but you've also got Vancouver and Winnipeg and Ottawa that are not as great. The Flames are struggling. Oilers are doing okay, but you're not up against like the Capitals or the Islanders or
exactly.
So it's going to be a really interesting, playoffs where when these teams make it out of their own division and play interdivision games, it's gonna be like, oh, who the hell are these guys? It could be like Columbus going in against Tampa where that when the sweep happened because Columbus was playing meaningful hockey for like 2 months and Tampa was just coasting, one of the best seasons ever in the NHL. And they're just absolutely flying, and then they meet this team that is like basically in playoff mode already because they've been doing that for months, and then they just get outworked and outbattled and out-hustled, and they lose. So it could be that sort of situation where teams just dominate in the regular season, and then they come up against this team that comes from a stronger division, and then it's just lights out.
Yeah, that's a good point that it's important to consider that. Like, you've got these two divisions, the West and what's it, the East, that the East or the Central that Tampa Bay's in?
I don't even know.
either way, those two divisions, because we kind of talked about how they were so tiered. You've got like Tampa Bay and Dallas up in the top of the one division and Colorado, Vegas, and St. Louis up in the top of the other. You know, they're the only real competition. Everyone else is just kind of there. They're just cannon fodder, basically. So you've got the other two divisions where there's actual competition happening. It's a bit closer, and maybe these teams will be a bit more ready for for the high pace, high action, high intensity games late in the season.
Right. Yeah. You mean you don't think Chicago is going to make a big push for playoffs with the overperformance that they've had so far?
I mean, Kevin Lankinen, he's been good. You know, Chicago, they made the playoffs last year too.
Yeah. Yeah. Luckily for the Oilers, they're not in the same division right now.
Yeah, really?
Yeah, I mean, I think in that it's the Discoverer Central Division. It's really Tampa Bay, Florida, and Carolina so far. Dallas has obviously played less games, but their points percentage is 583. So they've struggled a bit. In their last 10, they're 3-3-4. So even our own rankings, I guess Florida decided that we were unfair upon them, and they've decided to really put it together here. But yeah, it just seems like a pretty weak division, where you've got like those top three teams that are doing well. But you know, with all these postponements, like a team could come out of nowhere because they're flying under the radar, having played like, you know, five less games or whatever. And then they just come out and just have like a 5-game win streak or something. And then
yeah,
now
I mean,
they're back right up at the top.
A 10 plus point swing, depending on who you play and who you pass. So late right. season, those makeup games could be significant for the final playoff tiering.
Yeah. So it's just so tough to gauge how well teams are, because like you look at their opponents and yeah, they've got like a win streak or something, but you know, they've played like four in a row against a basement dwelling team. So I think that's just going to be a struggle all year.
Jumping all the way back here to Marc-Andre Fleury and a little bit of, you know, keeping the roster as strong as possible late in the season for that. You know, I mentioned how the Vegas was looking at trading him over the summer to try and free up cap space because his performance hadn't been as good and all that. Now that he is doing better, does Vegas try to sell high on him, or do they keep him and then have that 1A, 1B thing going with Leonard?
That's a good point, because I think if they don't sell, they're going to lose one anyway, probably, to Seattle. Unless there's a better roster player available that Seattle would rather take. I guess it depends what Ron Francis is looking at, because there's going to be some really good options for goalies, I think. But yeah, I think they might be well off selling high on him, but if Leonard is hurt, I don't think they go to Oscar Dansk to be like the guy.
Yeah, that's a main consideration, is that behind those two, you know, they have goalies who are okay, but they're not capable starters, really.
Yeah. Yeah, but they could really get a haul for Fleury if he's, you know, posting,
yeah,
what was it, a 940 or something?
Exactly, and you look at a team like Carolina, who's probably wanting to make a push. They weren't able to get anything in net. You know, do they find the cap space to be able to make a push by grabbing Marc-Andre Fleury for some goaltending depth later on? Because I think Mrazek's out long-term, and they're rolling with James Reimer and a rookie in Alex
Nedeljkovic. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that would be a good fit. I think in our season preview, we were talking about how it was disappointing Carolina didn't get anybody. And then with Mrazek being hurt, I think that would make a lot of sense. Bring in someone like Fleury. There's probably a few other teams out there that would be interested, that are, you know, on the edge. But I don't know. It seems like a weird time to trade anybody right now. But yeah, they'd probably be. I don't know. Fleury is so well liked by Vegas. I don't know how it would fly, but. Depends how injured Leonard is, I suppose.
Exactly. If it turns out he's going to be out for a couple of months, then they absolutely need to hold on to Fleury a bit longer. They aren't going to be able to roll with, you know, Oscar Dansk and whoever else is in the backup position there long term. But, you know, maybe it's just a minor thing. Maybe just tweet something, he's back in a week or two and he's got the all clear. So maybe we see, as we roll up to the trade deadline, more talk around Fleury, or maybe Fleury sticks around in Vegas for you know, the backup slash lets the team roll with the hot hand, and then he becomes expansion bait fodder and manages to be like the poster boy of two expansion franchises in the at the end of his career here.
Yeah, that would be kind of cool, but would also kind of suck for Fleury that you I'm like, great, I've gone through this twice now. Yeah, I mean, what are the expansion rules? You have to keep six. You get to protect how many players?
Oh, you know what? We don't even need to worry about this. Vegas is exempt from it.
Oh, right. That's true.
Yeah, Vegas is completely exempt, so they don't even have to worry about that.
Oh, yeah. That's so lucky for them. Ah, yeah, good call. Yeah, I guess they had to pay instead, right?
I think that was part of, like, the original agreement was that, or, like, they had to pay extra or do something else for exemption in the first expansion draft.
Yeah, they would be in a really rough position if they had to take part in this, though. Because they would probably have lost, like, Shea Theodore. Because they have so many guys with, like, no movements or no trades. They would have lost a really good player. You know, like... Yeah, good call. So maybe they are better off taking advantage of that and moving players and say, hey, we'll take that player if you don't want to, you know, leave them exposed and give us some picks or something, right? They're in a good place to do that instead.
They could leverage their own advantageous position in the way that they can.
Fucking Vegas. They keep getting richer. It sucks. And you just think that they made the finals in their first year and they didn't even have like Stone, Pacioretty, Petrangelo, or Leonard. It's just gross.
Such an incredible
Or Martinez.
Run. Yeah.
Oh my God. If they don't win a cup with the roster that they have, it's going to be pretty funny that they get beat by teams with less depth and less star power. Their team is absurd.
They went the farthest with the worst roster that they ever had, and then they keep getting the roster better and end up losing earlier and earlier.
Yeah, number one center, Chandler Stephenson. That's, I would never have thought that when he was on the Capitals. I think they traded him for like a fourth or something. But he's fast, super fast. That was always his niche in Washington. But, yeah, what an upgrade. Playing with Mark Stone and Max Pacioretty.
It's quite the opportunity for him there. But, I mean, like you mentioned, like he's fast. So, I mean, Vegas kind of makes use of players like that where they can take advantage of guys who maybe they're third liners, mediocre third liners on other teams, but they have that system that just lets certain types of players flourish. And I think we kind of talked about him last year, but Stevenson's one of those guys that he just has the right play style to flourish with Vegas.
Yeah, definitely. Speed, can outrun icings, can get stretch passes and all sorts of cool stuff. Also, shout out to Dylan Coughlin making his NHL debut for the Vegas Knights as a defenseman. He's from a place that Sean and I have lived or have been in, is Nanaimo.
He's a local guy for us.
I think he's from Duncan, but definitely a local guy. So it's always kind of cool to see guys like that, you know, make it. And with some of the injuries that Vegas has, he was able to get an opportunity to play, and that's pretty cool to see.
And I think that wraps things up for this time here on ClapperCast. Make sure you rate, review, and subscribe to our show and spread around the good word of ClapperCast. For more content, you can follow us on Facebook or Instagram at ClapperCast Media or on Twitter at ClapperCast. Thank you all for tuning in, and we'll be back next week with more hockey talk.